Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation, now the 12th Hour. And the organization today is January the 2nd, 2024, or is it Shivat 3, 28. We're going to start our first service today with the tract The World Yesterday is Today and Tomorrow by Richie Hollis, and it's tract number 12. And we're going to start with Will Germany or England win the title of our sermon is The World Yesterday, Today, Tomorrow. As we are living in a time in which we can expect anything but be sure of nothing, therefore all, including alike, statesmen, diplomats, and military will doubtless be surprised at just what will emerge from the present European conflict. At this moment, 1941, Hitler's dread legions are continuing their inexorable drive upon the world's mistress of the seas, and so far nothing has been able to withstand the fury of their onslaught, with the result that Europe stands in the terrified amazement and the whole world and is alarmed and the alarmed wonderment at what is ahead, willing, as was Nebuchadnezzar in his day, to give almost anything to know, but Yahweh alone knows the future. So this is the same thing we're facing today. Okay, for the wise men of today can no more tell the future then said the wise men of the prophet Daniel's time, Daniel 2. If you think this is an extravagant statement, then meet the challenge. Produce your cause, saith the Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reasons, saith the king of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Isaiah 41:21-23. For the one who foretold the rise and fall of the Babylon and of the nations succeeding it is the only one who knows what will be the outcome of the present distress of the nations. Luke 21:25. For the light then on this momentous question, now uppermost in every rational mind, we turn to the Yahweh of the prophets, who bids us look unto the writings of his ancient seer. There are the world events that concern his son, Isaiah 45:11, are foretold in the pictorial mode. For the world's history and prophecy is recorded first in the literal terms, second in the parabolical terms, third in the typical terms, and fourth in the pictorial terms. For the sake of brevity and in the interest of the facilitating comprehension, precluding the possibility of sidetracking, this silent messenger presents its message in the pictorial mode. For the kingdoms that have gone down, the kingdoms that still exist, and the kingdoms that are yet to come, whose legislations involve Yahweh's people, have been pictorially chronicled by both the Daniel and John, the Revelator. Now, in order that even the most skeptical and unbelieving mind be persuaded, the subject matter of this tract is introduced with the symbolism, whose prophetic import has already become history. A lion, a bear, a leopard, and a nondescript beast. For the Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by the night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens stood upon the great sea, and four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. For the first was like a lion, and had the eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given unto it. And another, and behold, another beast, a second, like a bear, and it raised up itself on the one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it, between the teeth of it. And it said, thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given unto it. After this I saw in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces, and set the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horn, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Daniel 7:2-8. These four great abyss, said the angel, are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. Daniel 7:17. Prior unto Daniel's vision of these beasts, Nebuchadnezzar, king of the ancient Babylon, while in a quandary as to the duration of his kingdom, was shown in a dream a great image composed of the four metals. Its head was of gold. Its breast and arms were of silver, its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, and its feet of iron mixed with the miry clay. Interpreting the vision, Daniel said unto the king, thou art this head of gold, and after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior unto thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of the potter's clay and part of the iron, the kingdom shall be divided, that there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with the clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Yahweh of the heavens set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Daniel 2:38-44. The great image of the kingdoms of today. And now, Daniel explained to Nebuchadnezzar that he saw up to this kingdom that was set up by Yahweh with his son here on earth in these last days. He showed to Nebuchadnezzar where that dream reached clear up to where we're at today in 2025. We're now in this Daniel 2, uh, 44 and 45. We're in Daniel 2:38 to 44. That's where we're at today. This little kingdom is the everlasting kingdom of David that is set up in these last days, and it was set up in 2002. So Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel showed that his vision of those four beasts, they reached clear up to the Passover of 2002 in Kermit, Texas, where the stone hewn out of Mount God hands, your abstraction image on the feet, grows into a mountain filled with the whole earth. This is the kingdom of heaven set up by Yahshua here in the south of the Father Tower, that started at the Passover 2002 in Kermit, Texas, Gilead Center, with Brother Johnson as the leader of that kingdom of Gilead Center. And so the judgment of the dead ended with Brother Johnson and the sixth seal, the sixth trumpet, the Kermit, Texas 2002, and the judgment of the living started at Revelation 7 with the seventh seal opening, and started the judgment of the living with Elijah David and the everlasting kingdom of heaven, Daniel 2:44-5. So this is where Nebuchadnezzar saw up to, and Daniel interpreted it to him. Plainly, let's continue reading. It says, plainly the four metals of the great image symbolize, as do the four beasts, a succession of four kings in their respective periods. For the feet, right and left, of iron and clay obviously represents two divisions of kings, the righteous and the leftist. And a fifth period, the time in which Yahweh of the heavens shall set up a kingdom, and that's the kingdom that we represent today, the kingdom of David, everlasting kingdom of David, which shall never be destroyed. The toes of the feet indicate a multiplicity of kings in both parties, the righteous, which are, we call them Republicans today, and the leftists we call Democrats. In another symbolism, a ram and a three-faced goat, Daniel saw that the goat in its first phase, that of the great horn, as the king of Grecia trampled down the realm, Medo and Persia, and that after the great horn broke off Alexander's passing away, four horns came up and it said, the kingdom divided into the four parts, and that finally from one of the four came a fifth, the exceeding great horn of Rome. See Daniel 8:9, 20:21, 22. Some think the exceeding great horn, the fifth, symbolizes Antiochus, who ruled one of the four divisions, but this cannot be, because the exceeding great horns coming out of one of the four symbolize a fifth kingdom, not one of the four standards. Moreover, the term exceeding great, in contrast to the term great, denotes a greater kingdom than Alexander's, and as Antiochus' kingdom in its greatness was not half so great as Alexander's, the theory is discredited, for the Roman Empire is the one that was much greater than Alexander's, and therefore it alone answers to the symbolism in going south, then east, then on toward the pleasant land, the west, Palestine. It necessarily went toward, in other words, Palestine, Donald Trump. I mean, Vicky Hollis means the land of Israel when he says Palestine. So I'll repeat that again. And going south, then east, then on toward the pleasant land, the west, and the land of Israel, it necessarily went toward the four corners of the compass, which is just what Rome did. Daniel 8:9 says that the exceeding great horn came out of one of the four horns of the goat, but does not tell out of which one. Daniel 11:5, however, explains that one of the princes of the kingdom of the south was to have a great dominion. This prince, therefore, is symbolized by the exceeding great horn, and shows that it came from the horn which symbolized the Ptolemaic dynasty, the southern division. Here is shown what history fails to chronicle concerning the origins of pagan Rome. Now we see that though in Daniel 2 and 7 the names of the kings are not made known, they are revealed in Daniel 8, and as Daniel 2 and 8 corroborates Daniel 7, it follows that the four metals of the great image and the four great beasts are symbolical of the four ancient empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and pagan Rome, respectively. For the following four maps show that history corroborates prophecy. It says, this is map four. It says the feet and toes of the image, Daniel 2, being a mixture of iron and clay, forecast an empire which cannot cleave together, the clay causing it to break into parts, into separate kingdoms, some large, some small, partly strong and partly broken. Okay, it says that obviously this scripture describes the present family of the kings and their intermarried state, mingled with the seed of men, coming as a result of the crumbling of the pagan Rome, for they make a fifth and more tripartite empire. Thus this prophetic picture clearly foretells that the rulers of today, unable to cleave one to another, Daniel 42:43, Daniel 2:42-43, are doomed to continual ruptures and hostilities among themselves. Map 5 shows the modern divisions prior to World War II of the ancient world. And we have that map here. And we're going to get on podcast here, hopefully in the near future. We're going to show these prophecies to the world in person on television or on podcast, a video camera. And let us go on now and into, so it says, Map 5 shows the modern division prior unto World War II of the ancient world has widely accepted the fourth beast, two faces. That's that pagan Rome at the cross, and that's the ecclesiastical Rome in 538-1798. One with the ten horns, that was the pagan Rome at the cross. And the ecclesiastical Rome during the Dark Ages, representing the Catholic Church, it had the seven horns, along with the little horn. Daniel 7:7-8 portray first pagan Rome and second ecclesiastical Rome. And the little horn, the horn head, the power that then ruled was a religious political church organization, meaning that it was a theocracy. So it was more or less like a theocracy. They had the civil government and which was a civil political government, and then they had the religious part also of it. The two went together. These four beasts coincide respectively with the gold, silver, brass, and iron of the great image. And this prophetic four-beast symbolism, along with its historical fulfillment, we see the passing political events and the consequent changing of the political status of the world from the time of the ancient Babylon on down until the time of the Christianized Rome. For the great image, however, brings us down until the present, the time in which we find ourselves ruled by its twelve kings. But as Daniel's series of the beast delineates but a part of the world's history, another series is necessary to complete it, for the only other such series is in the Revelation, as the first symbol in which is the leopard-like beast. And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast, and they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things, and blasphemies. and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth and to blaspheme against Yahweh, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power is given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Revelation 13:1-10. For the composite makeup of this beast, mouth of a lion, feet of a bear, body of a leopard, and 10 horns, is with the faithful witness that he is a descendant of the Babylon, the lion, Medo-Persia, the bear, Grecia, the leopard, and pagan Rome, the 10 horns. Hence this beast is a melting pot of the 4 ancient world empires, and must, along with the 7 heads and 10 crowned horns, characterize the world of today. For the beast 42-month period falls in the time of the ecclesiastical Rome, the empire after pagan Rome, whereas its wounded state, Revelation 13:3, symbolizes her during the Protestant period. Moreover, the beast represents 3 periods. Number 1, the period prior to its wounded state. Number 2, the period during its wound. And number 3, the period in which the wound, its wound is healed. Furthermore, this symbolization shows that the inspiration reckons the Protestant world still a Roman world. This we know from the several angles, for the first of which is in the fact that the beast 42-month period parallels that of the little horn's time, 12 months, times 24 months, and dividing of time is 6 months. The work against Yahweh and his people and both the records is 42 months long. For the horns of the nondescript beast having no crowns and the horns of the leopard-like beast having crowns point out that the latter symbolizes the world after the crownless horns, the kings that were to arise, Daniel 7:24, of the former beast were crowned. Now, as we have seen, it is clear that the ecclesiastical Rome, as a second phase of the nondescript beast, was a combined church and state power, a horn head, having the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things, Daniel 7:8. And that the Protestant Reformation caused the separation of the two. So while the ecclesiastical Rome's rise and reign are prefigured by the nondescript beast's horn head, her downfall is depicted by the leopard-like beast's wounded common head. For as a horn part, the silver power, having been taken away, the church was stripped of the sovereign power with which the state had clothed her, with the result that the governments are now independent of the church and the church is in subjection unto the governments. For it being true that the wounded head symbolizes a religious body, and that there is no distinction in appearance between the wounded head and the six uninjured heads, then the fundamental truth is that they all are figures of the religious body. Moreover, as those symbolical prophecies deal with the Western civilization, the home of Christendom, the heads definitely characterize the Christian denomination, just as do the seven churches of Asia, Revelation 2-3. The one difference being that the churches of Asia perhaps cover a longer period of time than do the heads. Furthermore, whereas the beast receiving the deadly wound pictures Christianized Rome humiliated unto death, deprived of her civil power, its recovering from the wound pictures her exalted unto life again, having regained her civil power. And as the wound was inflicted by the hand of the Reformation, it could never have healed had the hand continued wielding at it the sharp two-edged sword. For the healing, therefore, vividly depicts the fall of Protestantism and the rise of despotism. There is but one right interpretation of each Bible doctrine, yet a multitude of the conflicting interpretations are in the Christian world today, with the result that it is split into many sects and schisms, heads, with no two believing alike. Therefore lies the decisive evidence that these churches are divested of the Holy Spirit and are running ahead in darkness because of the professing to teach the truth, but teaching instead the doctrines and commandments of men, for they are reproved by having the name of blasphemy written over their heads. Revelation 13:1. Even now, in the closing hours of the gospel period, now here B.T. Hall is talking about the gospel period. Well, where does the Bible use that word gospel period? And now in the closing hours of the gospel period, the church says, I am rich and increased with goods. No. And have need of nothing, neither truth nor prophets. Well, I'm going to reread this again and read to you how he's completely wrong on this statement that I just read to you. When he said, even now in the closing hours of the gospel period. Well, the church, he's talking about the Seventh-day Adventist church, says, I am rich and increased with goods. No. When you go read it from the scriptures, it says, it's the angel of the seventh candlestick of Laodicea that says, I am rich and increased with goods. In other words, it's this one singular person that's a prophet to the Adventist church that rejected the message given to him from the next prophet that succeeded him. And it's the angel of the candlestick of Laodicea of the Adventist church that says, I am rich and it went and increased with goods and have need of nothing, neither truth nor prophets. See? Though in fact she is wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, because that angel of the seventh candlestick is the last prophet to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that was Brother Johnson down at Kermit, Texas. And that angel down at Kermit, Texas, Brother Johnson, he reigned for 33 and a half years. The same time that Yahshua reigned here on earth when he came the first time. And that was from 1970 to 2003. That's where Brother Johnson's 33 and a half years. As the angel of the seventh candlestick, and as he apostatized, it showed that he turned into being a false prophet in the end. Revelation 3:16 and 17. And about to be spewed out. If the prophet to the Adventist church doesn't repent, he's going to be spewed out. And sure enough, Brother Johnson was spewed out in 2003 at Kermit, Texas. And about to be spewed out if he fails now to anoint his eyes with this fresh extra oil, and being unmindful of her wretched condition, and Brother Johnson, the angel of the candlestick, being unmindful of his wretched condition, is now ready for the rejection of the last message that comes to him with that, and that was from that came to Brother Johnson from Elijah David, 2002-2003, with warnings and reproof, just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, Malachi 4:5, but also again to crucify the Savior should he in person rebuke her, thereby repeating her rebelliousness of old, as symbolized by Moses, okay, striking the rock twice, Numbers 20:11. Detail by detail, we are thus far and able to see that the healing of the wound is indicative not only of the church's failing to carry the Protestant Reformation to completion, but also of the world's government soon reverting to the despotic principles of the Dark Ages, to the rule of action before the wound was inflicted. This repetition of the past is to be brought about by the two-horned beast that represents the government of the United States Democratic and Republican Party since 1776. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying unto them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. for it is a number of a man, and his number is 666. Okay, so that means that translates into 6,000 years. That 666 goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and Cain was the first one to receive a mark on his forehead. And so he was the first one that, he was the firstborn of Adam and Eve, and he inherited the birthright to be the progenitor of the righteous line clear down to the end of time. But being the firstborn, he rejected that. And his next younger brother that was born, Abel, he accepted the plan of salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant that Yahweh and Yahshua made with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. He accepted that, and he practiced true worship, Abel did. But Cain would not practice true worship of the blood system. He used vegetables, and Yahweh wouldn't accept his form of worship. He accepted Abel's form of worship, because it says there in Hebrews 11:4, Abel offered unto Yahweh a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. Okay, so the blood sacrifice is how you obtain witness that you are righteous. For the power that is represented by this two-horned beast will identify itself with the false prophet. For together they are cast alive into a lake of the fire. Revelation 19:20. From this, it is plain to see that the wonders which the beast does in the sight of men, and by which he deceives them that dwell on the earth, Revelation 13:13-14, are wrought by the false prophet, Revelation 19:20. And the sight of the beast, Revelation 13:14. Clearly then, the beast's civil authority combined with the prophet's supernatural power points to a union of beast and prophet, an affiliation of state and of church representatives. So today that would translate into the Catholic Church having joined up with the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists. So the president of the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, Ted Wilson, he is the false prophet that's taken with this beast, and those that he had deceived and taken the mark of the beast, this false prophet, and they're cast into a lake of fire. So there we finally have it. We finally got it now. Because this false prophet, Ted Wilson, he goes to Africa with his people from the General Conference, and he's got this false doctrine of the three-in-one person of the Godhead of the Catholic Church, and he's going over there with that doctrine, and he's telling the Adventists in Africa, You don't believe Sister White anymore. You don't believe in the 2300 prophecies that was given to Ellen G. White in 1844. We're not teaching the state of the dead and judgment of the dead and the living. We're not teaching the antiquity day of the atonement anymore. We're not teaching the cleansing of the sanctuary that they taught in 1844. But the prophecies in 1844 says that the Adventists are supposed to repeat what William Miller had taught for 10 years in the world, said the Adventists had to go and repeat that again. And William Miller is the one that was given the 2300-day prophecy to give to the Adventists, and the Adventists was told that they had to go and teach that again, that 2300 days prophecy. And so Ted Wilson, the president of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, he tells the Adventists worldwide, you don't have to believe that. You don't have to teach that no more, because we only teach the universal doctrine now that the Catholic Church has adopted unto all churches around the world. They've all come into unity. The mystery Babylon woman is sitting on the heads of all the churches of the world. And Ted Wilson is teaching the universal doctrine of the three-in-one persons of the Godhead, of the Father and the Mother and the Holy Spirit being the third person of the Godhead. And so Jesus Christ is God in the flesh, and negating the existence of the Father. And in other words, the Holy Spirit now is the invisible God. And that's what Ted Wilson is deceiving the whole world with, starting with the Adventists, right today. And so he's a false prophet and the beast, and they and those that they had deceived and had taken the mark of the beast are going to be cast to a lake of fire, burning with fire and brimstone. For this beast represents a man who stands at the head of a nation, and whose influence goes far and wide among the kings of the earth. He is further identified by a number, the mystical number 600, 666, Revelation 13:18. Okay. So who is this this beast represents a man who stands at the head of a nation? Well, that man would be the Pope. He stands at the head of the Vatican. It's called a nation, 77-acre a nation, because they have a governmental system, and they have a church and state system today. So it says, and his mystical number is 666. For the prevailing belief that the number 666 is a numerical identification of some other power is the spawn of the Prince of Darkness, and is calculated to conceal, if possible, the identification of this two-horned power. For the inspiration puts the number on the two-horned beast. And there we must leave it. Okay. When the number is finally made up, the servants of Yahweh will be able to convince all the wise as to just whom the beast symbolizes. We now see, though, that no one who studies, let's do it again, for we now see, though, that anyone who studies the word of Yahweh need not be deceived when this power does appear on the stage of the action. Yet notwithstanding Yahweh's warning against giving allegiance to the beast, the world fails to give heed, with the result that even after this number is made up, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their forehead. Revelation 13:16. For the passage, if any man worship the beast and his image, and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, denotes that all who, after hearing the truth, continue to pay homage, either religiously or secularly, to the image, shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture, enter the cup of his indignation. Revelation 14:9-10. A full realization of the glorious reward that awaits mankind will even now compel man to shout for joy. And a like realization of the dreadful penalty that awaits all who fail to make Yahweh their refuge will cause them even now to weep and gnash their teeth, that all might realistically see these alternative prospects and be impelled thereby to repentance, for Yeshua has been at supreme pains not only to record a graphic description of the evil which through the instrumentalities of the beast Satan has determined upon the whole world, but also beforehand to make of a similar evil a perfect type of the image of the beast. For the type was struck when Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits, and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent together the princes from the 127 colonies of the captive Jews. They lived in the 127 provinces. The governors and the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces. There you have it right there. Out of the 127 provinces. And all the rulers of the 127 provinces were Jews of the tribe of Judah, to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. Then an herald cried aloud, "Unto you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, saxophone, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up, and who falleth not down and worshipeth, shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Daniel 3:1-6. And the outworking of this drastic and unrighteous decree, there are three outstanding aspects. The first warningly reveals the manner in which the beast will compel all the nations and people within his dominion to worship him and the image which he shall make. For the second sustainingly promises that justice in the Nebuchadnezzar's day, Michael delivered and promoted those who refused to worship the golden image. Michael was Yahshua himself, because he was seen walking around in that furnace with them. Daniel 3:12-30. So today will he deliver and promote all who refuse to worship the beast and his image. Okay. And the third door finally revealed that just as all who then stood faithful led a multitude of both high and low to acknowledge him as the Most High Yahweh, so today will all who heed the warning not to worship the beast or his image shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many unto righteousness as the stars forever and ever. Daniel 12:1-3. Hand in hand with history, the more sure word of the prophecy have been led us symbol by symbol down through the empire, through the empires, beginning with the ancient Babylon and down to the present state-rule sectarian world, will certainly lead us through and to the end of time. For we therefore, confronted with the logical necessity of another beast symbol one predicting the religious political world of tomorrow without a symbolism to carry us beyond the world of today. The prophetic word of the Yahweh would be incomplete, so for the sake of the logic, continuity, and completeness, this succession of the beast symbolism must include another beast, one which in the particular is to unveil the world of tomorrow, as the only such symbol remaining is the scarlet-colored beast driven by Babylon the Great. And there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven bowls, and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And one of those seven heads is the Seventh-day Adventist Church that this false prophet is headed over. Now, Ted Wilson, the president of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, he's the false prophet that's mentioned here in Revelation. And the woman was arrayed in the purple and scarlet color, and decked with the gold and precious stone and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. For the mother of the harlots and abomination of the earth, and I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Yeshua, and when I saw her, I wondered with a great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns. For the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. For that's Lucifer, that's Satan, and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of the life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. And here is the mind, which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains. Okay. And on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was, and is not, even he is of the eighth. No, let's do it again. And the beast that was and is not, even he is as the eighth. You got to use the right preposition. And is of the seven, and goeth into the perdition. And the ten horns, which thou sawest, are the ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. Then these shall make war with the Lamb. That's Revelation 17:14. And the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and they are with him. And they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And he saith unto me, For the waters which thou sawest, where the horse sitteth, of peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues, and the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast. These shall hate the whore, and make her desolate and naked, and shall sit, eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For Yahweh hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of Yahweh shall be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city, which reigneth over the kings of the earth. Revelation 17. Now from the manifest similarity between the leopard-like beast and the scarlet-colored beast, one should recognize that the latter is the image of the former. His deadly wound having been healed, and his horns uncrowned, for the crownless horns of the latter show that he represents the world in a time in which there are no crowned kings, but that instead the world is ruled by an ecclesiastical head, the woman that drives the beast. So an ecclesiastical head, then, would be the Pope all over again. Or it would be the president of the General Council of the Seventh-day Adventists that made an image to the beast of the Catholic Church for the Adventists. He did that for the Adventists. Moreover, the statement, the 10 horns are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast. And that 1 hour is here in this 12th parabolic hour that the kingdom of Yahweh is raised up in. Revelation 17:12 positively imports that the crowned kingdoms of today, which emerged from the fallen Rome during the Dark Ages, and which are represented by the crown horns of the leopard-like beast, will be uncrowned, dethroned, for the crownless horns of the scarlet-colored beast, and moreover have one mind, and give their power and strength unto the beast. Verse 13, while the woman reigneth over the kings of the earth. Verse 18, her writing on the heads, verse 9, denotes that she is to control the churches, and her driving the beast denotes that she is to be the sovereign of the world. This system of the worship and reign is not a new thing under the sun, for in her was found the blood of the prophets, and of the saints, and of all that was slain upon the earth. Revelation 18:24. She is therefore rightly called Babylon, the name of the oldest, the first world empire, the type. For this antitypical Babylon, from which Yahweh's people at this time are to be called out, is even to monopolize the world's commerce, as is clearly revealed in the prediction that when her reign ends, then shall the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. For the merchandise of the gold and silver and precious stones and of the pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood and all manner of vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and iron and marble and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and the souls of men. Okay. This brings us to the end of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. We're going to click on our audio archives to hear this message. The more, let us close now with a song.